Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Franco Cavallari as my special expert guest. Franco Cavallari is the CEO, President, and Research Director of Biologic Nutrigenomics Health Research Corporation. He is a graduate of UBC, where he is completing his postgraduate research at the Faculty of Medicine Brain Research Center. Franco has 30 years of experience in the nutraceutical industry, specializing in sports nutrition, product formulation, regulatory affairs, and consumer education. In 2004, he was inducted into the CHFA Sports Nutrition Hall of Fame. Franco has a strong interest in Alzheimer's disease. His therapeutic model provides a new approach to the treatment and prevention of this neurodegenerative disease based on the tenets of molecular medicine, nutrigenomic research, and botanical nutraceutical formulation. Franco is in the final stages of creating his own biomedical research laboratory. He is the author of Potential Within, Your Dog's Health, Healthy Living, and Trim for Life, and is a former IFBB North American bodybuilding champion. Franco is also a member of the CSNA Advisory Board. Good morning, Franco, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning, Corey. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's been a long time, hasn't it?
Wow, man, I just can't believe, and we've both been so busy, and I know that you're on the fast track to making enormous progress. You live in the now, man. So it's been like, 14 years since we had our last chat on SNU. Maybe let's start off with sort of a brief on what's been going on in your life since that time.
Yeah, a lot has happened. You know, I've been in and out of business in the nutraceutical industry. You know, I've really had a passion for research, even in the early stages when I started my first venture in the nutraceutical industry. If you remember, it was Champion's Choice. At that time, even, I assigned research funds to begin a research project that was dear to me and that related to curcuminoids. But, you know, sometimes you have limited resources and limited access to diagnostics. And I found that over the years, I found stumbling blocks in the progress of this research, but I continued to build business and was happy doing so, making a living. 5 years ago, 2012, had an opportunity when I licensed one of my technologies to collect the revenues, but to be a little free and go back to school. So I went back to medicine. And you know, it's funny because at age 46, when you have a family, two kids, and you want to make yourself available to them and still manage a business and go into medicine, people thought I was crazy. In fact, even the faculty advisor says, you know, are you sure you can do this? You need a 94% average just to get in here. And in fact, I didn't have a 94% average when I graduated with my bachelor's of science. So things have changed quite a bit in the academic scene today. So it's quite competitive. But they gave me an opportunity to enter in the first year. And they said, you know, if you don't achieve a 90% average in medicine in your first year, you have to withdraw. And it was a bit intimidating. But I think you and I, Corey, we're the same. If someone says, you know, this is going to be tough and you might not be able to do it, that's the impetus to say, what? Everything is possible. I'm doing this. And so I jumped in, and sometimes I said, you know, my gosh, this is a lot of work, but it was worth it. You know, I've been doing this now for 4 years. I finished the curriculum at the Faculty of Medicine at UBC, which is just unbelievable. And, you know, my objective originally was to gain a better understanding of disease pathology and genomic activity, to understand more how pharmaceutical companies are targeting drug targets at a nuclear level and a subcellular level in general, and be able to take our nutraceuticals, because this is where my passion is, and overlap them in those models and understand better how they function, to be able to optimize what we do in our field based on these models that are accepted in mainstream. And as you know, it's very difficult to have mainstream medicine accept some of the activity and the applications that we have in the nutraceutical industry. And we all know that they can be synergistic and, in fact, even replace some drugs in some cases. But the only way to really gain notoriety and credibility for the activity is to plug them right into their process and prove the activity in the medical field and in their backyard, and then say, see, this is done in the medical laboratories. It's proven to function the way we expect it to function, and here it is. And that's my goal. And in fact, you know, I've been able to take some serious steps in that direction already.
You know, thinking of the criticism that alternative, natural, functional medicine people would have of conventional medicine and the environment of which you are participating in now, what is the difference in the consciousness of the people and the staff and the people that manage that personally, do you see a strong personal devotion to health and training and natural food in those people like you would on the other side, or is that completely absent?
It's interesting. It's an individualized thing. You get individuals who are very much proponents of good nutrition and health as a foundation for general health and longevity. But we do still have a very tenuous situation, a powerful counterflow with regards to the pharmacology, when it comes to the pharmacology of botanicals. And, you know, it's interesting. I love our industry, but in terms of the nutraceutical industry, and I hate to put it this way because this may not be the case, it's basically a matter of perspective. There's some downfalls with regards to how we approach demonstrating that the research is functional, but the downfall is only a function of what mainstream expects in terms of the allopathic medical field. So these are all a matter of perspective. Let me speak to that in a more specific fashion. You know, when it comes to mainstream allopathic medicine, when we're studying drugs and their ability to neutralize drug targets that may be contributing to disease pathology, there's an affinity to find drugs that are highly selective so that you have fewer side effects. Selectivity means that it's hitting one target and not a whole bunch so that we see these adverse events that occur. And the reality is that this selectivity is only a matter of perspective, because now even the medical industry start to realize Tylenol, for example. Tylenol, if it were to be put through the test today, it would never pass, but it passed several years ago. And now today people are back, or the corporations, pharmaceutical corporations are backpedaling to provide more information about how to recognize adverse events and hepatic degradation because of Tylenol. But, you know, here's the interesting irony. As the allopathic medical field advances to find and develop a better understanding of their genomic and proteomic activity in a cell, what happens is they are less likely, or we now are less likely, to be able to discover new drugs, because this selectivity that we once thought was selective is just a matter of our lack of understanding and knowledge of other targets. So as our understanding of these drug targets expands, there are more of them that we know about in the database. And so when you try to achieve selectivity of one target with a drug, you're hitting so many more that you never were hitting in the past because you never knew of them. So when I say that all of this is a matter of perspective, you know, this selectivity now is beginning to kind of fade in a sense in the pharmaceutical industry, because they're realizing it's not real. It's only a matter of how much information you really know. If we know about all these targets, then a drug is not selective because we're hitting them. And we never knew that we were hitting them in the past, but we are today because we know of them. So how does this relate to natural medicine? Well, the reason why natural medicine, nutraceuticals, have been scoffed at is because they lack the selectivity that the artificial drugs do in the pharmaceutical industry. And they lack the selectivity because they're designed by nature to work in synergy in our cells, to hit multiple targets and affect the cells in a way that are more balanced, so to speak. But that doesn't fit allopathic medicine's philosophy, you see. So, you know, I think, as we probably already know in general terms, that there's a matter of perspective here that pushes one type of treatment, natural medicines, aside and away from the overall treatment of humanity, simply to move and default to using pharmaceuticals, because the allopathic medical field has taught about the selectivity and how important it is to prevent adverse events. But I think it's coming around. Let me tell you, even with curcuminoids, you know, let's go back to the nutraceutical industry and talk about the isolation of compounds so that we remove the broad activity of, say, turmeric, and we improve the concentration of the activity, say, in curcumin extracts. I mean, this has been an area of study for me that's been my focus. My focus has been inflammatory cascades and drug-resistant inflammatory disease. That really has been the focus of my thesis, and cuminoids have been the drug that I've studied. Well, what I've discovered is that when we take curcumin, which we know to be isolated, you can break it down into several parts. And I've been able to isolate various curcuminoids and study them all individually to be able to create a fingerprint and identify how the pharmacology of curcuminoids works in our cells and why it's broad and not selective. And I discovered one of the curcuminoids, and this is a recent discovery that will be published now. I just filed the patents on it. But one of the curcuminoids targets one of the drug targets that pharmaceutical companies are trying to target. And what this does is that this target becomes dysregulated or irregular in cases of drug-resistant cancers and drug-resistant inflammatory activity. And so when you know, oftentimes people are challenged with cancer and we're able to treat the cancer first time around and it comes back. This drug target is called MSK, becomes dysregulated and the drugs won't work anymore. So companies have been looking at how do we manage this protein so that it's no longer empowering the cancer and we allow the drug to work its wonders like it did the first time around. And believe it or not, one of the fractions in curcuminoids does that. It actually will help downregulate that protein. And I discovered the mechanism of how it works. It's called microRNA. The genomic level. And then because of that, because it's a fraction that's a minor fraction in the curcuminoid, I've been able to patent it and use it in isolated concentrations. But these are the things that we with passion for nutraceutical, for the nutraceutical industry, have to do that will not get done by pharmaceutical companies looking for drugs that are patentable in an unnatural form. So, you know, I think it's a critical thing for people to take steps the way I have and create troops that will be able to study nutraceuticals using this model, because there's no funding mechanism today to be able to study nutraceuticals the way there are funding mechanisms to study the pharmaceuticals. And this is one of the reasons why we've been held back in terms of the demonstration of the efficacy of these products and the safety of these products. And unless there's a mechanism put in place to be able to demonstrate this, you know, we won't have patents that empower protection of these nutraceuticals in the health industry. And therefore, you're going to have pharmaceutical companies taking over with their unnatural drugs, which, by the way, I have to say, without them, you know, many of us would be destitute in terms of disease. It's just that we're relying on them too much to treat too many diseases when nutraceuticals could be used with far fewer side effects for some diseases. So I don't know if I'm babbling on and answering your question, but the reality is here that, you know, I think we have to have a lot of people come into play here with an interest in studying nutraceuticals and using the pharmaceutical models and therefore demonstrating the activity that is viable so that allopathic medicine can accept them and embrace them. And it almost feels like a surrendering because you're using the allopathic model to demonstrate and allow them to be used in the allopathic field. But the reality is that in order for these nutraceuticals to be utilized by medical practitioners in a way that they can be useful, we have to bring it into their field and into their study program so that it's understood irrefutably.
All I can say is thank God for Monty Python's Babbling Brook.
I love it, man. I love it.
Yeah, because as they so impressively presented, you know, the importance of such a brook brings to mind, I mean, every word coming out of your mouth, man, has significance, and I love it. It's just fantastic. You've always been a great speaker, and you've been able to nail the topics down in a way that people can understand, and that's a true talent. You need to be on a TED Talk for sure. I was thinking as you were speaking, the landscape of discovery. Now, how secure is the deterministic view of genetics in the past compared to today with what you've discovered and know with nutrigenomics and what's going on in the genomic revolution? People that say that I'm stuck with it, it's all in the genes, the hardware is what determines everything. And now we've got a different view, don't we?
We definitely do. And, you know, the interesting thing is that no doubt there are some diseases that there's nothing you can do about. The mutation is singular and profound. And I say singular because a lot of diseases are a function of multiple mutations in genes, in multiple genes. They're multivariant. So it's a function of a genetic mutation and your environment and your lifestyle that contribute to the final disease. Metabolic syndrome is a clear example of that. It's well documented. You can have mutations that contribute to insulin resistance. And that's irrefutable. But the fact is that, you know, type 2 diabetes may not manifest unless you contribute or feed the disease with a lifestyle that contributes to further resistance. And so you just have to be, it's like, you know, some people find it easier to stay lean than other people. And so there are variable degrees of insulin resistance and metabolic inefficiency, if you want to call it that. But this is just the variance amongst us all that functions. These are called single nucleotide polymorphisms that cause slight changes in our genetic makeup that make us all individual from the standpoint of our phenotype or physical look to the standpoint of your metabolism. But then that means that you have to compensate with a lifestyle that does not allow that mutation or polymorphism, they call them, to allow disease to develop. So you have to be more diligent. And the fact is that most of us who are not diligent because we have, say, the so-called perfect genomic system that are perfect, eventually as you age, things start to degrade and you have to start taking care of yourself. So you may have to start a little earlier to be more diligent, to exercise frequently to make sure that insulin function is optimal and to overcome any potential irregularity in your genetic dysfunction or genetic mispotential, if you want to call it that. But you're right. You know, most diseases are not a function of one mutation. They're a function of multiple mutations coupled to lifestyle, environmental factors, even chemicals that may contribute to downstream metabolic challenges. So we do have more control than you think, even with diseases that are profound. I'll give you a clear example. I mean, I have ulcerative colitis, and it was considered severe ulcerative colitis in 1992. I was hospitalized 2 times. I was hospitalized again in 2006. And the fact is that I developed a system based on education, but based on personal experience that allowed me to cope with the disease. And it's a devastating disease if you don't have the tools to cope with it. But even what I knew, I took for granted. And in 2009, I said, you know what? I think I'm okay. This disease, I've overcome this. And even though there's a genetic component that does not go away, I said, I'm going to just, you know, stop taking this compound that I was taking, for example, as a compensatory, and it was a curcuminoid fraction, which I began to study later. And in 2009, I stopped using it. I was hospitalized again. That's why in 2012, when I had the opportunity to go back, I said, okay, I need to study this and understand better how this can help more people and justify it in the allopathic field in their own laboratories so that we can apply this to treat people and help change their lives. And so far, I'll tell you, and I say this, we as a nutraceutical industry, I believe that, you know, me being in the position I'm in and doing what I'm doing, you wouldn't believe the eyebrows that have been raised in that faculty of medicine saying, how is it possible that this compound has targeted this genomic or proteomic target? And pharmaceutical companies are looking at this for decades. And the reason is, this is natural. It's natural. It's in our environment. It evolved with us. It evolved to help us in one form or way in another. You know, one day we'll sit down and I'll give you my philosophy on how or why it evolved to do what it's doing. But there are more of these in the environment that we know have been helpful to people through our nutraceutical applications in the nutraceutical field, and they need to be studied in the same context. Now, this has been probably one of the most exciting 4 years of my life, validation, discovery, and my gosh, it's just been an amazing journey.
It sounds like it, man, and I know for sure it is for you. So now you've got this strong interest in Alzheimer's. So tell us what you've learned and what your approach is and what you're doing about it.
Well, Alzheimer's, you know, is of interest to me as a side note, and the only reason why I fell on to studying Alzheimer's, first of all, is an interest because my grandmother, I mean, she had Alzheimer's and it's in my family. But many of the drug targets that I was studying with the curcuminoids basically led me to some of the activity that contributes to the development of Alzheimer's. And, you know, Alzheimer's is not that straightforward. There are many genetic contributors, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to develop Alzheimer's. For example, the plaques that are common in the pathology of Alzheimer's, we all develop them as we age, and they tend to accumulate with age. But, I mean, if you dissect the brain of a 85-year-old man who's passed away, he may have more plaques than an Alzheimer's patient will have who's dysfunctional because of the disease. So I developed a theory originally where I viewed these plaques as deposits. And so we tend to accumulate these deposits that are interneuronal. So these amyloid plaques, I call them deposits of amyloid protein that are pushed outside the neuron, and they deposit outside the cell to protect the neuron because you don't want these amyloid proteins accumulating inside the neuron. And if they accumulate, then they begin to cause the symptoms of Alzheimer's and neurological degeneration. So what I began to study is the plaques and determine, you know, what are these plaques made up of? And I began to notice that they are loaded with metals, toxic metals, heavy metals that we know can contribute to neurological disease, you know, Mad Hatter syndrome. And so when you start to see that they're loaded with copper, mercury, lead, you start to think, okay, why are they loaded? I analyzed the amyloid proteins and began to see that there are many amino acids in the amyloid protein itself. And that protein, this beta amyloid protein, these amino acids serve as chelators. So many of the amino acids are chelation amino acids, and they serve well to chelate metals. So I began to study the theory that metals contribute to the pathology, if not even the pathology of Alzheimer's. And lo and behold, start to see characteristics that are common in the literature, even for Parkinson's disease. And so I developed these papers that bring all the literature together to contribute to support in some way or another to my theory. And the interesting thing was that when you begin to take all of what's already been done in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease research, it fits perfectly like a glove in terms of this theory. So, you know, I don't have the answers to Alzheimer's, and nor I think does anybody else at this point, because it's very complex. But the literature, when you look at it, fits so perfectly with the theory that toxic heavy metals are contributing to the development of Alzheimer's. And when you look at third world countries that are not developed, that have a very low, if nil, rate of Alzheimer's, and even people that migrate, that immigrate from these countries that come to first world countries, then enter into the high-risk pool for Alzheimer's development, you start to wonder, is there an environmental factor? And sure enough, there is. But you know, if you have that genetic propensity for the disease coupled to the environmental impetus, such as heavy metals, possibly, and even other things such as oxidative factors that may be over and above the heavy metals, you're going to likely be at high risk for Alzheimer's. So I'm studying Alzheimer's in this context, and the curcuminoids fit this concept quite well because they are also metal chelators. So they help to chelate metals and dispense of them from the body, but they're also powerful anti-inflammatories because the inflammation that stems from the oxidative activity of the metal in the brain is what eventually kills the neuron and prevents what's called LTP or recall in the different centers of the brain. So, you know, it kind of fell upon me as a secondary study of interest because my primary study of interest is, you know, chronic inflammation, autoimmune disease, and autoinflammatory disease in the context of the curcuminoid drug. And it's separated and isolated curcuminoids like never done before. But this has definitely taken me to a place where there's a lot of passion, and that's what this biomedical lab is going to be about. I'm in the car right now driving to sign the lease papers for the lab, and we're bringing on technicians to carry on the work with the patents and the Alzheimer's and inflammatory work to take it to the next level.
Well, it's that lab I want to talk about next. Now, do you know of this dude down in Texas? He's a physician, and the FDA has tried to destroy him. He's got a cure for cancer. He discovered these anti-neoplastins, they're called. His name's Dr. Brzezinski. Have you heard of him?
No, I haven't, no.
They made a movie out of him with Mercola, and you can go online. I've been following it for years. But anyway, his therapy is legitimate. He's a really good dude, and they tried to destroy him, and they failed, and they didn't stop trying. But anyway, what impressed me the most, Franco, was that he financed his own lab, financed his own research as an entrepreneur, and he wasn't on the take. In other words, my perspective is that most scientists, if you want to call them that, are on the take. They're being supported with money from taxpayers and grants. And I know the scientist here in Vernon, he's a biologist, he says 70% of his time is dedicated to trying to get more grants to maintain his income for the future. So with that in mind and a perspective of freedom versus being controlled, is this the element of what you're trying to do so that you have more freedom to direct your research towards what you think is right?
Absolutely. You know, and that's the reason why I pulled the research out. You know, the thing is that I have to tell you, working in the university lab, the resources are unbelievable. I mean, there's some amazing minds in there that, you know, I have to say, like, I bow down to these people in terms of their knowledge and experience, but it's all pharmacological. And the challenge is that, you see, the financing for a lot of this research does come from pharmaceutical companies with, you know, an underlying incentive and impetus, right? And so to go in there and begin to do research on nutraceuticals and try to gain some research funds to do so is very difficult because nutraceutical companies don't see the value in putting research money into play because it's hard for them to protect a patent that stems out of this research. But the model I developed, the interesting thing is that it does create the opportunity for patentability. And I've already proven that. I've done that. I've got two patents now, a third one coming. And the reason why the model works is because it's hitting drug targets that are already patented in drug format. So the patent office cannot refute the fact that these are active, right? And this is a very difficult thing to do in that environment because you're basically fighting the tide because the money's coming in from pharmaceutical companies. They don't want to put it into that. They want to put it into things that they can better regulate and be empowered by. So what I've done here is I know already that these compounds have delivered activity that's functional. I want to be able to navigate them down a path that I can control. You know, like I said, the Faculty of Medicine is an amazing place. I'll tell you, there are people there that are too bureaucratic, but there are people there that have, honestly, I've never met people that work as hard as they work and that are so committed. But there are those that are about the bureaucracy, and it makes it very difficult, even for those who are committed, to do their job. And that whole thing then is compounded for me coming in from the nutraceutical industry because I am in industry. And it's caused me so many problems because I am in industry. And they say, you have a conflict of interest. Well, sure I do. But my primary motive here is to provide people with an opportunity to treat disease with drugs that are less intrusive and with new drugs that we already know work, but to optimize them. But it doesn't matter. You're in industry. And here's the presentation I made to the Faculty of Medicine when we had this conversation with a group of people about conflict of interest. Every single one of you researchers are here doing research for organizations that provide the funds, like you said, to do the research. So if you don't deliver an outcome that's functional, you may not get that grant again next year. You may not get it renewed. So talk about conflict of interest here. And every single person that's working in that medical field, for example, advances. They advance to tenure or to different positions up that ladder based on how much work they do, how many studies they publish, and how many patents they publish. So tell me about conflict of interest. It's embedded in the whole process. But yes, I'm in industry and I come from industry. I'm not a virgin like most medical students are. But I come here with an intention to optimize the place that I came from. So, yeah, this is a very difficult conundrum, and it is the reason why I started this medical lab. I've struck a deal with two companies to license two of my patents, and it is very lucrative. And part of that deal is a significant component that doesn't go in my pocket, but a significant component that goes through to finance this laboratory to hopefully contribute to humanity in profound ways and our nutraceutical industry in ways that cannot be circumvented.
You know, one of the first lessons I learned a long time ago, because I was working in a health food store in Washington when I was going to school down there in 1975. And my first book on health was How to Get Well by Pavor Rola. And I'll never forget this, Franco, because it's really taken a hold of me. It was like he was talking to me personally. Don't destroy yourself in the process of teaching and promoting health. So in other words, if you are investigating and researching or lecturing and traveling, don't take it to the level that you yourself become destroyed in the promotion of what it is that you're, you know, trying to turn people onto. So with what you said now, because I've been watching all of these professors and physicists and guys and girls dedicated wholeheartedly to doing the research, and then watching medical students go through medical school get chewed up and crushed and destroyed, and what happens to them physically, mentally, So how do you yourself, because I know you got a family and you're involved at the highest level of research and study, we talked about this the other day, how much it takes out of you, how do you stay well during that process? And what do you do yourself? What is your salvation to keep you afloat?
You know, the one thing you have to do is make sure that you force balance in your life. And it's very easy to become imbalanced when you start to do research. It's addictive. It's like treading water in uncharted water, trying to find that island. It's very addictive when you find the signature, but yet you can't pinpoint the cause of that signature. And you're chasing ghosts sometimes. But the key thing is, you know, creating balance. And one of the ways that I create balance, I think, is to never miss a workout. And I usually will work out at 6 a.m. It's either a 30 to 45 minute intense cardio session, and then bang, I start my day. Or it's resistance training. And I usually alternate the one day resistance training, next day cardio. And I've been luckily been able to maintain a reasonable physique. I mean, I just turned 50, and I know you're up there too, and you stay healthy and fit, and you look fabulous. And I feel good about that. It also helps you stay mentally healthy. So, you know, stimulating the body physically is known to actually stimulate neurodegeneration. So you have to stimulate your brain. There's no doubt about that. And you have to stimulate your body at the same time in order to stay completely healthy and strong enough to be able to contribute to society and to be able to fight some of the uphill battles that, you know, when you're trying to change the game, you're going to have people come at you. And I have this saying, you know, I posted on Facebook and somebody asked me, was this about us and our encounter with this bureaucratic situation? And I said, you know, there are a lot of times, and Corey, I know you've encountered this yourself, where you're going to fight the tide and fight normalcy to make your point if you believe in it strong enough. And oftentimes you're facing huge numbers of people and resources. And the fact is, you know, I've said that you've got to face those like a tiger, because, you know, the numbers before you could be sheep. And, you know, if you're a tiger and you're one, those sheep don't matter.
I love that, man. That's good. So get your mind off the volume and start focusing on what it is you have inside of you and stay true to the vision. You know, Arnold always comes up in my mind all the time, you know, just watching him in his career and using him as kind of a standard or a model, not necessarily agreeing with everything he's done, but just that focus, that laser beam focus, which I know that you have and we all need. Now, what's your website address, Franco, and what can we find there?
Well, the website address of Biologic Nutrigenomics is www.biologicnr.com. it just basically, you know, there's some articles on there. It speaks to some of the research. But I am creating a landing page now that will introduce the new sister company, which is Biologic Pharma Medical. And so Pharma Medical will be taking nutraceuticals and studying them in the context of pharmaceutical activity, and then not changing or altering their biochemical state, but maintaining their state and their patentability based on the target. So you'll see that coming shortly. But biologicnr.com is the current company, and then through that we'll be introducing the sister Pharma Med company.
Excellent. So, wow, man, that was like 30 minutes. It just like vaporized, man. Unbelievable.
It's that rambling brook.
Oh, man, no kidding. I tell you, I always enjoy spending time with you, Franco, and it's getting better. You know, as we get older and wiser and more experienced, you learn to appreciate great conversation, don't you?
You do. And Corey, you know, like I said to you last time, we had this brief conversation. I actually accidentally called you, but it was accidental coincidence that it was meant to be. You know, I appreciate you and appreciate all the effort, the intensity, and the diligence. I mean, you've really set a platform for people to better understand nutrition and the value of nutrition and health performance and general longevity. Kudos to you, man. I know it's a hard road to pave, but you're doing it. I mean, it's never a done deal. You know that. You're doing it and you're doing it well, and you have the soldiers in place to be able to carry your word. So congratulations to you.
Thanks a lot, man. Yeah, I haven't lost touch with it. And going back to Colgan saying to me, Corey, build it and they will come. And it's so true, you know, and moving away from the industry and becoming more in control of my life. That's what I advocate to everyone out there. It's just like, choose what it is you love and do it. And don't be afraid and don't listen to the naysayers and find your spirit from within and choose your talent, you know, and just do it. Just do it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
As a final word, what would you say now to these personal trainers out there that are starting to wake up to the significance of nutrition? How important do you think nutrition is, notwithstanding the exercise and the training, but nutrition itself, how important is that to the athlete, to the trainer, and to the client getting the information?
Oh, it's critical. It's critical. I mean, we all know that genetics play a huge role in sports, especially at the elite levels. But the fact is, you know, when you go to elite levels, you have all these people with formidable genetic potential. And the thing that will differentiate them is how they're able to leverage that genetic potential. Nutrition plays a critical role in optimizing performance. There's no doubt about it. And I knew that from the beginning. And it was one of the assets and advantages that I had as a bodybuilder. There's no doubt that few people really understood how to apply nutrition to optimize fitness and achieve the body they needed to achieve to compete. And that was one of my advantages. And if you don't have that, you're not optimizing the full potential of your genetics. It's that simple.
Franco Cavallari is the CEO, President, and Research Director of Biologic Nutrigenomics Health Research Corporation. And he has a vast amount of experience in the health field. And Franco, I just want to thank you for the work that you have done, your contribution, and look forward to future discoveries. And we want to check in again and have another discussion for an update. So take care. It was great speaking with you.
Likewise, Corey. I appreciate you, man. Take care.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com.
Representing lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.